We're going to be in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 in just a moment, but we're going to start in Exodus chapter 32. So you may want to mark 1 Corinthians 10 and then turn back over to Exodus 32. It has been said, those who fail to study history are destined to repeat it. I know that when we go back and look at the Old Testament, there are always some who say, I don't know why we need to spend time in the Old Testament because we are New Testament people and we need to focus on the New Testament. And that's true. But I think we forget the purpose for which the Old Testament was written. Paul laid it out very clearly in Romans chapter 15, verse 4. For everything, he said, that was written in the past was written to teach us, so that through endurance and the encouragement of the Scriptures, we might have hope. There is tremendous value in knowing the Old Testament. The Old Testament was the Bible of the first century Christians. Jesus was intimately familiar with the Old Testament and used it frequently in his teaching and preaching. So here in Exodus chapter 32, we're going to see what Paul references just in passing in 1 Corinthians 10. And I'm afraid that because we tend to be so woefully ignorant of much of the Old Testament that we could read right through 1 Corinthians 10 and not even know what he's talking about at all. So we're going to go back, and I'm not going to take that chance. We're going to read the very passages that Paul will be referencing in 1 Corinthians 10, so that when we come to that passage in just a few moments, we'll clearly understand what he's talking about. Now, God promised to deliver the Israelites from their captivity, their bondage, their slavery in Egypt, and he made good on that promise. At the Red Sea, they went through those waters. They parted. They went through on dry land. The cloud led them by day and by night, and they were there. Moses was their appointed leader from God. And they emerged as a new people, a nation belonging to God. God provided everything they needed. He provided their food, manna from heaven. He provided their drink, water from the rock. There could be no doubt of God's love and God's protection for His chosen people. Yet they constantly turned away from Him, and they turned to idolatry. Now, I want to just look at a few of those references of Israel's turning away from God to idolatry. And I want you to see clearly how God judged His people. They started out, we're not sure the numbers, probably in excess of a million. Some scholars even say up to 3 million people left the bondage of Egypt. And they went out, but because they refused to go into the land that they could have gone into in just a few weeks' time, God says, okay, then you'll wander for 40 years. And during those 40 years, a whole generation will be wiped out. Now, normally, you wouldn't have seen a million people die in 40 years. At least many of us here can remember back 40 years, and we still know a lot of people who are living after a period of 40 years. But God was going to bring His judgment upon this nation. It wouldn't just be ordinary attrition, just ordinary events where people grew old and died. There would be a series of judgments brought upon these people during that 40 years that would completely annihilate that whole generation because of their idolatrous nature. Now, that's what Paul is referencing. Look first in Exodus chapter 32. They had scarcely left Egypt. They had seen all the mighty plagues. They had seen the miracles of God. They had walked through and been delivered through the Red Sea from the Egyptians. And yet, as soon as they got to the mountain, Moses went up to receive the law, and they already were ready to make a golden calf. And they began to worship that golden calf, and they began to be involved in sexual immorality and revelry. And so, in verse 25 and following, here in Exodus chapter 32, we read these words, this instance. Moses saw that the people were running wild and that Aaron had let them get out of control and so became a laughingstock to their enemies. So he stood at the entrance of the camp and said, whoever is of the Lord, come to me. And all the Levites rallied to him. Then he said to them, "This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Each man strap a sword to his side. Go back and forth through the camp from one end to the other, each killing his brother and friend and neighbor." And the Levites did as Moses commanded. And that day, about 3,000 of the people died. Now, I should have warned you before we began this lesson. We need to put up that little content warning that this may be for mature audiences because of the violent nature of what you're about to see and hear. And there are some disturbing texts when you go back and read the Old Testament that involve the judgment of God. Here we see that they were hardly in to their journey, and now 3,000 of them are cut down by the sword because of their sin with this idolatrous golden calf. There, broken on the ground, lay the Ten Commandments. Moses had come down in his anger, had thrown them down, he had seen all that they were doing, and there, number one on those commandments was this one: "I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me." Well, in Numbers, turn over there, two books later in the Old Testament, Numbers chapter 21. The people begin to complain, and they complained loud, and they complained long. And did you know that God, under the heading of idolatry, lists all kinds of things? I mean, those people who were involved in revelry there with the golden calf and began to be involved in sexual immorality, did you know that that's a form of idolatry because it's putting something before God? Did you know that complaining is viewed by God in that subcategory under idolatry? Because you are saying, God is not sufficient. God does not satisfy. I'm not happy with God, so I'll turn somewhere else. And these people begin to complain. In Numbers chapter 21, look down in verse 4. Numbers 21, verse 4. It says, "They traveled from Mount Hor along the route to the Red Sea to go around Edom. But the people grew impatient on the way, and they spoke against God and against Moses, and they said, 'Why have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the desert? There's no bread, there's no water, and we detest this miserable food.'" God had provided manna for them, and they didn't like that manna. "Then the Lord sent venomous snakes among them, and they bit the people, and many Israelites died. The people came to Moses and said, 'We sinned when we spoke against the Lord and against you. Pray that the Lord will take away the snakes from among us.' So Moses prayed for the people. And the Lord said to Moses, 'Make a snake and put it on a pole. Anyone who is bitten can look at it and live.' So Moses made a bronze snake and put it on a pole. Then when anyone was bitten by a snake and looked at the bronze snake, he lived." Here a few thousand more die because of this judgment of God that's brought upon these idolatrous complainers. Turn to chapter 25, Numbers 25. Again, we see that they began to be associated with the nations around them. They began to worship the gods of their neighbors, and they began to be misled into idolatry again. Here in Numbers 25, beginning in verse 1, it says, "While Israel was staying in Shittim, the people began to indulge in sexual immorality with Moabite women, who invited them to the sacrifices of their gods. The people ate and bowed down before these gods. So Israel joined in worshiping the Baal of Peor, and the Lord's anger burned against them. And the Lord said to Moses, 'Take all the leaders of these people and kill them, and expose them in broad daylight before the Lord, so that the Lord's fierce anger may turn away from Israel.' So Moses said to Israel's judges, 'Each of you must put to death those of your men who have joined in worshiping the Baal of Peor.' Then an Israelite man brought to his family a Midianite woman right before the eyes of Moses and the whole assembly of Israel while they were weeping at the entrance to the tent of meeting. When Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, The priest saw this. He left the assembly, took a spear in his hand, and followed the Israelite into the tent, and he drove the spear through both of them, through the Israelite and into the woman's body. Then the plague against the Israelites was stopped, but those who died in the plague numbered 24,000. Again, a violent, shocking passage. But God's judgment is seen clearly in this. Idolatry was something that God wanted to be crystal clear about. He would not tolerate. God had zero tolerance from the very beginning about anyone or anything that was ever put ahead of Him in worship to Him. And so God brings about these striking, violent judgments upon His people in order to clearly burn into their consciousness that He is a jealous God who will tolerate no other God before Him. Now we read again, back up to chapter 16. We skipped that one, back up to Numbers chapter 16. This is the rebellion by a group among the Israelites who said, we are leaders of equal value and importance as Moses, even though God had said Moses is to be my leader. And so Korah had a group of people, and they said, we'll just create a civil war, and we'll overthrow Moses, and we'll lead the people. And so we read about Korah's rebellion. And by the way, did you know that rejecting God's leadership is a form of idolatry? It's saying what God has put in place is not good enough, so we'll do something better than that. And God calls that idolatry. Look in verse 23 of chapter 16. There in verse 23, it says, then the Lord said to Moses, say to the assembly, move away from the tents of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. And then on down, skipping in verse 28, then Moses said, this is how you will know that the Lord has sent me to do all these things, and that it was not my idea. If these men die a natural death and experience only what usually happens to men, then the Lord has not sent me. But if the Lord brings about something totally new, and the earth opens its mouth and swallows them with everything that belongs to them, and they go down alive into the grave, then you will know that these men have treated the Lord with contempt. And as soon as he finished saying all this, the ground under them split apart, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them with their households and all Korah's men and all their possessions, and they went down alive into the grave with everything they owned. The earth closed over them, and they perished and were gone from the community. Here it is, another rebellion. In verse 49, it says, in that plague, in that judgment sent by God, 14,700 people died. Israel left with an excess of 1 million from Egypt, and after only 40 years, through natural attrition and through the judgments of God because of idolatry, you know how many were left? Over that young age that left Egypt, only two of the older generation, Joshua and Caleb, only two were allowed to cross over. Moses didn't make it. Aaron didn't make it. Miriam didn't make it. All that older generation didn't make it. Only two survived because God was intent on showing them His abhorrence to idolatry. That reminds us of the New Testament passage, many are called, but few are chosen. Now, Israel had a problem with idolatry that would persist throughout much of their history. It was only after they were taken into Babylonian captivity that they came back cured from idolatry. And even then, idolatry is so subtle that it has new forms and new ways in every generation. But you know, these Christians in Corinth, the most American of all the cities of the ancient world, in Corinth, those people who had come to Christ and they had lived for a number of years and they had begun to slip into this very same sin of idolatry, and they had become cocky and self-assured about their relationship to God, they had been redeemed from slavery. They had experienced God's special blessings. Now, as Christians, those who had come to know Jesus Christ, they believed that they could be involved in all kinds of fringe activities and still be secure in their relationship to God. Almost 2,000 years after these events we just read about back in the book of Exodus and Numbers, and this same attitude, this same taking chances with risky behavior that would eventually lead to sinful behavior was apparent within the Corinthian church. They had wisdom, and they had knowledge, and they were filled with pride, but they had a problem with idolatry right there in Corinth. And Paul wrote them that it's okay. You know, they had several problems. He says, now if you buy meat that's been sacrificed to an idol and take it home and eat it, there is nothing really wrong with that because that idol is nothing. So he said, you do that. But if there's a brother who's weak and you're going to jeopardize his relationship with God, then forego your right of eating meat sacrificed to idol. But then there was a second problem, and some of those mature Christians who said, you know, we knew all along there was nothing to that, and we knew we could eat that meat. Not only were they eating that meat in their homes, they said, well, we'll also go into the temples of the idols, and we'll join in the banquets in which these things are offered to these idols, because we know that that idol's nothing, and we're strong Christians, and we know better, and so we can go into the to the temples of the idols. And Paul said, no, 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 you draw a line. You can't do that. You go in there and you're going to be tempted in the midst of all those worshipers to join in their worship to a false god. He said, it's one thing to eat meat sacrificed to an idol in your own home. It's another thing to go into the temple of that idol and be present while that idol is being honored and worshipped as a god. But you know, apparently some of those Corinthians thought, well, we're wise and we're strong and we're above such influence. And Paul says, no. He says, you must draw a line. That's why he says what he says in chapter 10. Now, let's go to chapter 10. Back to the New Testament, and we'll read it with better understanding, having seen what the Old says. Paul says, for I do not want you to be ignorant of the fact, brothers, that our forefathers, the things written aforetime, our forefathers were all under the cloud, and they all passed through the sea. They were all baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. They all ate the same spiritual food. They all drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank from the spiritual rock that accompanied them, and that rock was Christ. Now he is drawing on Christian imagery, and he's applying that to the Old Testament. You see, as Corinthian Christians, they had all been baptized. They'd gone through the waters of baptism. He said, yeah, well, so did those people back in the Old Testament. They went through the waters of the Red Sea. They were immersed in the waters of the Red Sea in the cloud. Moses was their God chosen leader, and they were immersed in Moses. They followed him. And the Christians in Corinth says, yes, but we take the Lord's Supper every Sunday. He said, they did too. They drank of the supplies that God gave them spiritually. They drank from the rock. They ate the manna. They did all of this, all that God had given them and all that God had commanded them. They did all the same. So he's using these types of Christianity and connecting them with the Old Testament. He says, those people were just as secure in their relationship with God as you are today through being baptized into Christ and through remembering the sacrifice of Christ and the Lord's Supper every Sunday. He said, you're no more secure than they were. Nevertheless, look what he says. Nevertheless, verse 5, God was not pleased with most of them. In fact, all but two. And their bodies were scattered over the desert. I'm sure they're all beyond decomposition now. But if you could go out there in that wilderness area, you would see one long circular cemetery from that crowd that left Egypt, and they went around in circles out there burying their dead for 40 years before two of that generation finally crossed the Jordan into the Promised Land. The point is that just because they began the journey, they weren't necessarily going to finish it. In fact, they didn't finish it because of the sin of idolatry. He talks about in verses 6 and 7. Now these things occurred as examples to keep us from setting our hearts on evil things as they did. Do not be idolaters as some of them were, as it is written. The people sat down to eat and drink and got up to indulge in pagan revelry. That's the very statement that was made there at the golden calf. He says we should not commit sexual immorality as some of them did. And in one day, 23,000 of them died in the plague that God sent. We should not test the Lord, as some of them did, and were killed by snakes. Do not grumble, as some of them did, and were killed by the destroying angel. These things happened to them as examples, and were written down as warnings for us, on whom the fulfillment of the ages has come. So if you think you're standing firm, be careful that you do not fall. That's the message. Be careful, folks. Just because you become a Christian, just because you can say, well, I'm a member of the church, and I go to church every Sunday, and I take the Lord's Supper, and I do all that God asks me to do. Idolatry is pervasive in every age. The temptation is there in all ages. And we are tempted just as much as they are. That's why that verse is there in verse 13. No temptation has seized you except what is common to man. They were tempted by idolatry. We're tempted by idolatry. But God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted, He will also provide a way out so you can stand up under. You know, the easiest way out of temptation is to avoid it. Don't go there in the first place. Don't begin dating Moabite women whose gods are different than yours. Don't begin looking for something better because you're dissatisfied and complaining with what you've got. On Wednesday, one of our elders, Irvin Dock, challenged us in this area about contentment with where we are as God's people. No, these people in Corinth had begun to go down the very same road. You don't need a golden calf in order to be an idolater. Adultery, fornication, homosexuality, pornography, materialism, all these things are putting something ahead of God. And God has gone on record. God says, I won't tolerate it. You may get away with it in this life. God doesn't bring plagues and judgment upon us in this day like He did then. But you can rest assured, you may stand before God one day and judgment will happen to you just as surely as it did to those folks back then. He refers to all these different situations, leadership, rejection of Moses. Korah tried that. They in Corinth tried to throw Paul overboard. They tried to undermine his apostle or his authority as an apostle. They complained, well, why can't we go to idols' temples? Why can't we do these things? When they complained in the Old Testament, snakes fell among them. They were engaged in the Moabite marriages, and Paul has to explain evil companions really do corrupt good morals. That's not just an old saying, that's the truth. Well, the point in all this, there in verses 11 and following, he explains, you better be careful when you think you stand, lest you fall. You better be careful when temptation comes, as it will, it's going to be common to all of us. You better look for the way out. God will provide that way out because He's faithful, but you better look for it. Don't ever think that you're so mature and so strong and so educated that you're above the fray. Even mature Christians need to stay out of idols' temples. Now, I can give you a list as long as my arm of things that would fall into the category of idolatry, but each of you knows what it is individually. You know one area of your life that you might be tempted to put ahead of God. For you, that's your temptation area of idolatry. Whatever it is, don't go there. Look at what's written before. Consider the consequences. Know that the God that we serve is the same yesterday, today, and forever. You know, as we consider these things, there are probably one of three responses we can make to this lesson, to what Paul's saying. We can either ignore it and we can say, I don't like all those gruesome Old Testament stories of judgment and I just don't want to go there. And a lot of people ignore that. That's one option. Second option is one that many of the Corinthians were taking. I know those people fell into idolatry, but I won't do that. I'm stronger than that. I can watch adult-rated programming, and it doesn't really affect me the way it might some weaker person. And we can rationalize and so deceive ourselves, and we can enter into idols' temples and be so deceived by Satan until we finally are caught in the trap. So that's one option. The third option is to be wise, to take heed, to understand that the same thing can happen to me that has happened to so many before me, and to avoid doing the things that I have seen others do and learn by their example. Be wise. And I hope and pray that we as God's people here will never deceive ourselves, not ignore the warnings and not deceive ourselves into thinking that we're above that, we're stronger than that, we're more capable than that. But we'll listen to what God said. So this morning we're going to offer an invitation song, and if we can assist you in any way, if we can pray for you, if we can help you as you're obedient to the gospel, we'll do that. We invite you to come as we stand and sing.